With that, I give you Gary.
Okay, our last exciting episode, we were talking about circling triangle. It was a symbol that we incorporated as a trademark for AA in 1955 at the International in St. Louis. It is symbolic for, in many ways, for those of us that were around before we, quote, lost the rights to use it. I was a delegate from Colorado in 1993 and 94, the General Service Conference. The topic, the overriding topic in 1993 was chips and medallions. Since the days of Sister Ignatia, she used to give out a 50-cent piece that had the corner of it cut out, and she would give it to everybody coming out of St. Thomas Hospital. The idea behind cutting the corner out was that when you leave here, you're not whole. You're not whole. So Alcoholics Anonymous, or whatever spiritual path you take, is what's intended to help make you whole in the world out there. The deal that she made with everybody was, if you get drunk or whatever, you got to bring the deal back. I don't know if she ever got any of them back, but that was the deal that she made. So the practice of commemorating time of sobriety started in treatment. This was not an AA practice, but it became one very quickly. Started in Cincinnati, they started giving out little wooden discs painted different colors. Then when plastic poker chips became de rigueur, they started giving those up. Chip manufacturers got on the bandwagon starting in the 60s. Maybe a little earlier, a couple of people with cheap stamping machines would send something out with maybe some praying hands on it, or a butterfly, or some kind of deal. And then the circle and triangle started to appear on the face of the chip, encompassing a Roman numeral to express the years of sobriety, days, whatever. Chips are an outside enterprise. They are not Alcoholics Anonymous, never have been Alcoholics Anonymous. They're manufactured by, I think there are 8 manufacturers of them in the U.S. They are all AA members, and they all engage in the, quote, drunk junk business. You know, you have necklaces and, you know, hell, you can even get a circle and triangle tattooed on your forehead if you want. A particularly ugly way to use it, but it happens once in a while. So our job of the conference was to determine whether or not, because the motion was that the Alcoholics Anonymous consider manufacturing chips. Word got out that this was what was on the plate. The chip manufacturers, each one of them sent in their statistics on how much they sold in the prior year, and along with a position paper that said that it would substantially deprive them of their income, and that we were doing things in contradiction to A members' best interest, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We were hitting all the way around the target, but we weren't hitting the bullseye. And so the General Service Conference took this endeavor on. What came out of it is some detail that might be worthy of note. In 1992, the chip business to the AA groups was about $8 million. Of that, that compares in that same year to the contributions to GSO at $3.9 million. So clearly we'd established our priorities. It was still all about us. Another piece that came up was there are no awards or rewards for our sobriety. Those are self-evident by the way in which we live. However, we decided as a conference that we were going to make this a matter for local autonomy. They could decide. One thing the General Service Conference cannot do is it cannot govern the conduct of its groups or its members. That's one of the warranties of the 12 concepts. We promise as a conference, we will never perform an act of government until we did. And I'll get into that a little later. The next year, 94, the New York Attorney General's office was headed by a guy named Elliot Spitzer. He was trying to get some political capital. And so he tried to take on nonprofits. He viewed them as nefarious dens of inequity. They were sheltering income. They weren't paying any taxes. These people are up to no good. And one of them that fell under the radar was Alcoholics Anonymous World Services. And so we were sent a cease and desist letter by the New York AG that said you will either enforce misuse of your trademark without license or we will sue the board. So the conference took that on in 94, and I was still delegate, so I was there my second year. We had to look at this whole chips and medallions thing. Meantime, we had sent a cease and desist letter out to all eight manufacturers and said, in view of the activities of the Attorney General, we ask respectfully that you stop putting the circle and triangle on your chips. And some of you that were around then started to see all kinds of things like a bullseye chip or maybe a Bill and Bob head chip. I mean, we had it all going on. We went back to butterflies, praying hands. I mean, we had everything crazy going on. And all but one agreed. And the one who did not agree lives in California, where everything in evil starts in AA.
Thank you.
I'm telling you, he just said, sue me. And we did. We sued a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for trademark infringement on the circle and triangle. Our attorneys were just stellar folks. They said, slam dunk, we'll get venue in New York. This is a complete win-win for everybody. First thing we lost, venue. We ended up in California. Part of the discovery process that he demanded was a list of every GSR and DCM for the last 10 years. His point was he was going to prove that AA was buying these chips, therefore financing an outside enterprise and lending their name to it. The whole fellowship, 60-some% of the groups at that time in the U.S. and Canada, were engaged in the activity of giving chips away. 60%. It's probably more than that now. Okay? We lost venue. We could not honor the discovery. Why? Anonymity breaks. District court actions, all the evidence, all the exhibits become matters of public record. We would have given up names of over 20,000 AA members, full name. Now, some of them might not have been members by that time. But you can see the problem. The spiritual side of it was, what in the hell were we doing suing our own members? The conference said they were going to tell the board, you can't sue them anymore. And no more lawsuits against members. Well, that's great spiritually. But legally, the board has to have the right to decide to protect its assets. Giving away the symbol to all these chip manufacturers bars a principle in corporate nonprofit law that's called dilution. You cannot give away your assets. You have to sell them. It's the law of the land. We didn't write it, but it was the law that we were under. The lawsuit that was getting ready to be... During the conference, we were discussing this behind closed doors. The New York AG's office had six lawyers out there in the hallway waiting for the decision. And what they held in their hands were lawsuits against 21 trustees. Personally and collectively as the General Service Board of AA. If we would have passed that conference action that said don't ever sue them anymore, those lawsuits would have been dropped on their table right then. They'd have been process served. in the conference. There was so much at risk that we had to back away from our policy. We had to back away and say, we can't tell the board not to sue. We want them to be very judicious about what they're doing. Okay? So the decision was made, the New York AG's office went away. And the deal that we made with the AG's office to avoid being sued was the General Service Board, Alcoholics Anonymous World Services, the AA Grapevine, the three corporate entities that make up our fellowship's corporate governance, can no longer use the circle and triangle in any way, shape, or form. The fellowship itself can continue to use it. You want to put it on your flyer, you're welcome to do that. That was in 1994 we made that deal. And the New York AG lost interest at that point, because he'd moved on, he was trying to be governor now. So we kind of died for lack of interest. But it created a horrible situation for the board. We also found out at that time that all the trustees were serving without director's insurance. So those lawsuits would have penetrated the corporate veil and would have hit their homes, their bank accounts. No bueno. Not good. Not good. That's how we gave up the right to use it. You'll be happy to know that some of us past trustees got together in Atlanta several years ago and drafted a letter to the General Service Office Manager and asked her to make discreet inquiry to the New York AGs to see if we couldn't abandon the terms of that agreement and begin using it again with a stipulation that we would never, ever enforce its misuse. I can tell you that from what I know about the situation, having been part of the original petition to do it, we are told that the New York AG's office is amenable to that. They haven't come to a final agreement. But I believe that by the end, maybe of this year, the General Service Board, AWS and Grapevine will be able to be, again, use this. Why is it important? Today, more than at any time probably in mankind's evolution, we are visually bombarded. And so we've kind of changed how we look at things. Visual identification is very important. There is no better symbol than this to the AA way of life. It embraces all three legacies. It is a great pictorial. I work with a lot of young men, kids 15, 16, 17 years old. Take them through the steps, you know, do the deal. They are very struck by this. Somehow it captures them. It compels them. So when I'm doing three legacy sponsorship, I use this symbol a lot. Every one of them has asked a question. Most of my literature is hopelessly dated. It's back from the 80s, 90s, and it has the circle and triangle on it. And they say, how come our new stuff doesn't have that on there? It gives me an opportunity to tell a way longer version of the story. But it more importantly, it gives me something that I can show them that visually captivates them. I think that's a critical piece in working with others. I do. They have to get a hold of this thing and internalize it. And if a little picture is simple like this helps, good deal. Good deal. Right? I'd rather have them get it this way than a YouTube video. God, no telling no what's going on out there in that world. Any other questions? Yes.
Okay. Where did the circle triangle come from?
Probably Egypt. I'm serious. It means a lot of things. In California, it's a symbolic of a unisex a restroom. See, there are people over there. There's something wrong with those people. It's on hieroglyphs on the pyramids. And it goes back to the dawn of time. Bill told us in 55 he didn't think it was a good idea to trademark it. But again, he was still colliding with the board, which was largely holdovers from the foundation days. They said, no, no. Nobody else has ever trademarked it. We're going to. Trademark is different than a copyright. Trademarks last forever. Copyrights in this country are renewable basically for a period of 50 years. And they expire.
So, one more question.
Okay.
So, whose idea was it to incorporate it into AA?
Probably the board's, I'm guessing, in about 1954. To come up, I think one of the conference actions in 54 actually was to come up with a symbol that symbolized Alcoholics Anonymous.
They're like branded in
branding. Branding, yeah. Ma'am. Bill proposed it in 1962 to the conference through right of appeal. The board would not take action. He took it direct to the conference. The conference weighed in on it for a couple of years. In 65, they recommend that the ratio change from a majority of non-alcoholics to a majority, two-thirds, of alcoholics. And that didn't actually take place until 1968. Actually, at the time we took the money, we didn't have that policy. We took over the years $30,000 over the years, and it was all paid back. We are the only fellowship that ever paid the Rockefellers back for their contributions. The only one.
Last question. When did we lose our trademark? Like, we had something that was trademarked, and then we lost the trademark, and so then it was started getting published by other people. I don't know if that was a big book.
Copyright to the big book. Different deal than a trademark.
And how did that happen?
Bill thought he was a lawyer. That's the simplest explanation there is. Bill was the author of the big book. He had to sign off on an extension statement before he died, and he forgot. So in 1968, technically, we lost the copyright to the first edition. In 1980, 12 years later, at the International Convention, we found out about it. Some guy was selling knockoffs in New Orleans at the International Convention. First edition books, $25 a pop, leather bound, really nice. And the trustees went running over there like a bunch of wet hens and said, you can't do that. And he held up his little opinion letter from his attorney who said, that copyright's in the public domain. And then the proverbial you-know-what hit the fan. Many people feared greatly for that. In fact, Bill came up with the second edition in 1955 thinking that it would perpetuate the copyright to the first edition. Wrong. In order to extend a copyright, the original author has to substantively change the book. I'm guessing since 1939 to today, to the fifth edition. That's like a group, man, in the day, in the 60s. The fifth edition. There you go. We have not changed the front part of our book since the dawn of it. Yeah, there's been a few words here and there, but we've not changed the book. Let me ask you, what do you think the chances are the fifth edition is going to substantially change the front portion of the book?
Zero.
Slim to none. Unless, and I'm going to point this out to you, it's not protected. There is no protection under the conference or anything else for that first 164 pages. Any conference can come in at any point in time and change that thing substantively. And if they can get it to pass, it will happen. It almost happened when I was a trustee. There was another trustee who got up in a board meeting and made a motion. He'd been on the literature committee 13 years. I don't know how that kind of crap happens. And he became, guess what? an expert in our literature. And guess where he was from, by the way?
California.
You got it. And he made a motion. He said we ought to engage a committee to rewrite every bit of our literature.
Where is he now?
He rotated, we hope. Yes, ma'am, one more.
When did they start that thing where they're like, hey, you need to rotate your positions because of what you just said, you can stay in one position too long, so now like every 2 or 3 years you're going to rotate positions?
Yeah, the principle of rotation started with the Cleveland Intergroup office in 1939. The guy that was the manager of that office served 9 months, and he said, I think this position should rotate. Nobody had ever heard of such a thing. He said, I think it's inherently dangerous for anybody to be in a position of authority in AA for any length of time. And so he started it. The New York office adopted it. They would have people change desks. By the time the conference came along, we developed this 2-year rotation for delegates and presumably for GSRs, DCMs, etc., through our conference charter. So that's where it started, Cleveland, 1939.
Very last thing. Could you talk a little bit, how often is the conference?
Every year, April.
For like a week?
Yeah, they call it conference week. It's really about 10 days. There was a question back here. Tarek, and I'll get to you.
Yeah, I have a quick question for you. So in my experience, I've read some of the brochures and literatures, and I think you touched on it earlier, but it seems like there's a lot of different messages that are portrayed through some of the brochures, the books, things like that. So I heard you correct, me earlier when you said that a lot of the people that serve on these boards that come up with this literature are non-alcoholics.
Some are, yes.
Some are. Has there ever been a push to change that to all alcoholics? I mean, like, as an alcoholic, I would think, and this is the first time I've even heard that we have non-alcoholic people writing our literature, which blows my mind. It makes absolutely no sense to me because AA is founded on our experience, which a non-alcoholic can never have and will never have.
Hey.
So what business do they have writing our literature?
Well, oftentimes they're commissioned people to, you know, we used to have a writing department, we still do, but it's skeletal. Regardless of who's writing the literature, leaving aside that, we have a responsibility of oversight. How are we letting this stuff out of the box? That, to me, is the bigger question. We ask people to do something based on some vague. We need a pamphlet on hoof and mouth. Why not? We got one on everything else. But what do we know about hoof and mouth? Nothing. Let's engage a hoof and mouth expert. And so now a hoof and mouth guy comes in or gal comes in and pens this wonderful piece of literature that's going to end up being a 4-page pamphlet. And you got a bunch of non-alcoholics saying, oh yeah, this literally is not correct. We need to transpose, and pretty soon it just loses all purpose. But we have the ultimate responsibility. We're the final authority of the conference, and it's supposed to be mostly alcoholics. How does this stuff happen? Because everybody's asleep at the wheel, and nobody wants to pay attention. Nobody wants to be the bad guy. Some of you I know love being the bad guy in your group. But some of you have a real hard time with what's being decided by the group, and maybe not the strength of conviction or the gift of the glowing tongue or whatever to get up and say, you know, for 41 reasons I disagree with what we're doing. And I can't even begin to enumerate what those reasons are. But there's something that don't feel right about this. One of the obligations of every member, and it is unavoidable, when your time comes, speak up. If you don't speak up, don't depend on somebody else to do your work for you. Don't think for a minute that he's going to think like I do. He'll go ahead and say it and make me look good. To hell with that. Say what you got to say. What is the old deal? Show up, suit up, stand up, speak up, shut up. That's every one of our obligations. I don't care who you are. Newest new guy on the block. Out of the mouths of babes come the pearls sometimes. And we got to be awake to that. But we're all asleep. This is a natural outgrowth of our lost 12-step. Where everybody's thinking it's somebody else's job. this fellowship has lost its sense of a personal investment and accountability to the thing that saves our life. We take it for granted. He's going to be here.
Yeah.
Sad state of affairs, my friend. It seems to me. If you guys don't take anything away from here, you are members of Alcoholics Anonymous. And with that comes a tremendous amount of responsibility. A tremendous amount of responsibility for the future, your kids, your grandkids, your my kids, my grandkids. We're in the kid business here. Everybody's somebody's kid. I think we evidenced that by our initial poll. We're in the grandparent business here. We're in the dad and mom business. The greatest press blot that we had was the rebuilding of hopelessly destroyed families that had gone too far. I know we've all got our stories about personal disasters in relationships. If you want to have an effective relationship, come to understand these two legacies. Those are the relationship builders. If you can get along on an AA committee, I guarantee you, you can get along in your marriage. I guarantee it. Remember these two. Don't leave them behind in the dirt. This is how you live. And this is how you're going to be able to live in a world that they didn't invite us to the advisory council to write the rules for the world. They should have. We'd have had some valuable input. Regardless of what happens in this room and every other room of AA, I have an obligation out there. I must use these principles or I can't survive it. I can't survive it. And I suspect neither can you. To say they're not important, I'm not drinking the Kool-Aid on that. Tarek, you had a question?
Yeah, it's a question and a comment. I was fortunate when I showed up, I was told right off the bat the message is the 164 pages of the big book, the basic text. And I don't know about the first two editions, but I do have a printing of the third edition with a dust cover. And one of the things that I tell the guys that I work with, or anyone that asks, is that is the message. But we all know if we left here today and went back to our respective home groups, and at the next group conscience, ask everybody what the message is. You're not going to get one unified answer. And I've always wondered, how does something like that, that's what scares me, if that slips through at the conference, and they take that out of the dust cover, because a lot of people go to the dust cover, they want to see what the book's about. It specifically says the basic text, the first 164 pages, is the AA message. The fourth edition comes out, and they take that out. It says the first 164 pages, which had been the foundation stone of many alcoholics recovery. And then they went back and changed that. Now, does that not concern you that if something like that slips through, the answer that most of us said, we don't think it's going to get, the fifth edition won't have any major changes to it. These are the same people we have up there making decisions that affect all of us right now.
Right. So what would one take from that? A, let's watch who we elect. Just because they're breathing in and out and they're warm, don't make them the best qualified. If we don't set up the structure so that the worst of the worst has a chance to go represent us and represent us well, we've failed. We have failed. Because we've introduced economics into it. Or we've introduced, well, you're not a lawyer, we can't use you there. We got plenty of goddamn lawyers. No offense against those in the legal profession. I would tell you this, you know why they wear a tight shirt collar, lawyers? Keep their foreskin from going over their head, but that's a... totally immaterial. One second. Well, probably more than one second. I heard something. Remember this report I was talking about from this ad hoc committee about chips and medallions? There was a little nugget buried in a whole bunch of words that were just, quite frankly, like you guys sitting out there going, what in the hell is he talking about? The report said the AA message is contained in four basic documents. The big book, the 12 and 12, the book, The AA Way of Life, which is today known as Bill Sees It, and AA Comes of Age. Everything else that's ever happened in AA is a commentary to that basic message. Okay? Every article that's ever been written, every report that's ever been given, every district meeting, every AA meeting, anything anybody's ever said, read, killed dead, whatever, is a commentary to that basic message. Last night I asked a question that I think everybody in their time is going to have to answer. What does AA mean to me? What is AA? Because we get in arguments all the time. Them people are not AA. That group is not AA. That convention is not AA. That book is not AA. This and that. We can exclude everybody that's in the room on one way or another. We can exclude ourselves. When I go around preaching, you're not AA, you're not AA, pretty soon there's nowhere I can go. Nowhere. So I do not hold with the argument that, and this is probably a difference, but we can talk about this the rest of the night, buddy. We probably will. That the entirety of AA is contained in the big book. The message of individual recovery, absolutely. There's no way to take the 12 steps out of the 12 and 12. There's no way to take the steps. Study them? Yes. Get philosophical about them? Yes. Victimize yourself by Bill's enlightened thinking? Yes. But you cannot take the 12 steps out of the 12 and 12. Yes, you can incorporate the questions in the 4 step as an example to help you get to your, I'm a favorite, 4 column inventory. You can help yourself by answering some of those questions. When Bill talks about the 7 deadly sins, great barometer. There are others. Yes, it's helpful, but it's not the taking of the steps. Taking the steps only comes from one place. And that's the big book. That's the only way to do it. But we've managed to improve on that. How many preformed forms have you seen for a 4 step? Oh, here's the 13 column sex inventory. It's the 13th step, you know. And good grief. Let's complicate the perfect, shall we? Yeah. Okay.
I'm sorry, what's your name again, sir?
Gary.
Gary?
Yeah.
I'm just, for my notes, what's your title?
What's my what?
With the group, like
a... The Parker Group.
The Parker Group. Okay, and my question is there like, to when people form AA or NA groups or whatnot, do they have to register with something, or because is there a website or something I can go on, like no matter where I go to find which AA or NA groups are near me?
Yes. I think most of the central offices, and maybe districts, maybe even some groups, list themselves. All you got to do is hit AA. You're going to get all kinds of excitement.
Like on Google or whatever?
Yeah. Or NA. Just do that, and somebody will have a meeting directory. You might be in Atlanta, but you might get the directory for Honolulu. But eventually, you'll drill your way through, and you'll get there.
There's an app for that.
Yeah. What, meeting finders make it or something? I'm sorry, that was uncalled for.
Since you said that, I thought if Bill initially is the one who said meeting makers make it, who said that, what he meant is people who create the meetings, the people who put the work in to make the meeting happen, are the ones who make it, not the attendees. And is that true that Bill actually?
I don't know. I doubt it, because I think Meeting Makers Make It came out after he died.
Well, plus, when he got sober, there was like one meeting a week, if that.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna talk about Meeting Makers Making It here, the next session. Any other questions? Y'all have been really great. I mean, when you get the interaction with people and they really have some sincere questions, it goes much better than wah-wah-wah-wah-wah-wah from up here. And so I do appreciate your questions. And I'll be honest with you, there are some stupid questions. Just saying, but I haven't heard any here, so, okay, they're all good.
I'm going to ask one more question, sorry. So, I mean, of course, in my eyes, somehow this release of some of this literature that's coming out needs to be stopped, but also there's a lot of this literature that needs to sort of disappear somewhere. How does that process start?
It starts with a motion. It can be made by a member, can be made by a group, district, whatever, to say, I think we should discontinue the pamphlet for the following reasons. And it'll go to trustees literature, and they'll evaluate it. You may not like the outcome, but again, get neutral to the outcome. Be a part of the process. See what happens. Just to give an example of something that takes years to figure out how we screwed up, there was a pamphlet started in 1950 called, it was called A Letter to the Woman Alcoholic. Some of you may be around long enough to know that it was this sort of an article that was written, it turns out, in the Ladies' Home Journal by a professional writer, a non-alcoholic. And somebody at the office in 49 or 50 saw this thing and said, wouldn't it be a great idea if we made a pamphlet out of this? Just like somebody read the Serenity Prayer in the Reader's Digest, a non-alcoholic, who says, this is it, baby. This is us, a non-alcoholic, who submitted it to the board, and they said, let's light the lighters and sing the Kumbaya song, shall we? We have achieved nirvana. And that's how that came into us. Okay? I don't question the source of non-alcoholic versus alcoholic. I just am looking at a process that the alcoholics are the gatekeepers. And we have abandoned that. Because, well, they've got a lot of letters after their name, and clearly they know best, and I got to get home for Monday night football. And we got, I mean, I can't be any more emphatic. We've got lives hanging in the balance by what we say. More importantly, not what we say, how we say it. And our pamphlets are duplicitous. They are confusing. They are conflicting, and in many cases not even relevant.
Yeah.
The 12 steps illustrated. How in the hell did we come up with that? Somebody thought it was a good idea. So now we got pictures of the 12 steps. I mean, are you kidding me? I clearly voted against that when it came out. Yes, ma'am.
In your opinion, and from your experience, why do we have such an excessive oversaturation of these pamphlets? Like, what's fueling that? Like, so many.
The recovery pamphlets in the catalog cover about 10% of the volume. The Unity pamphlets cover about 5% of the volume. And the service pamphlets cover 80-some percent of the volume. What that tells me is the service pamphlets are probably more broadly directed in some cases, and in some cases more specifically directed, focused. We have, I think, 6 different CPC pamphlets that say essentially the same things, except the header says, if you're a professional, AA wants to work with you. If you are a minister, AA wants to work with you. If you are a law enforcement professional, AA wants to work with you. They say essentially the same thing. But because somebody is wedded to what they do for a living, they decided we have to have a special thing. That never happens in real AA, I know. Right? Right? No, not in the group. Hey, I want something for Lutherans. You know, recovering Lutherans. I'm Lutheran and I'm Norwegian and I'm cursed from birth. Those people are the most serious, cynical, depressive people on the planet. Thank God there was an 8th Irish shove in there somewhere. Otherwise, I'd have had no sense of humor. Not saying anything bad about Norwegians, really. But.
Thank you. Quick question. How do different 12-step fellowships, how do they attain permission to use the...
They seek it. A letter from... Typically, they'll form a corporation to create a board. nonprofit typically, and then they'll apply to the General Service Office for permission to use the 12 steps. There is no such thing as the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. There is no such thing as the 12 steps of Cocaine Anonymous. There is no such thing as the 12 steps of Al-Anon. They are the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous used with permission by 228 and counting fellowships. That's how you receive permission. It will be evaluated on its merits. The one that came in that said, we want to apply for permission to use the traditions and steps for a program called We Hate Alcoholics Anonymous Anonymous. That came through while I was on the board. And it was like, why would, if you hate us, why would you want to use our stuff? Credibility. Credibility. This is the thing I can't emphasize enough. We have a tremendous reputation in the public. There's a little thing, I'm going to go ahead and name it. I know this is being recorded, but I don't care. I am so past the day of aspiring to anything. I'm trying to figure out how to be a group member in my group, and it's hard.
Amen.
You ought to be a member of my group. God almighty. Things have been around since Coolidge, I think. There's an outfit out there called Back to Basics. This was put together ostensibly to replicate the experience of the first five people, maybe. No, it was more than that. That's what they're saying. In the Cleveland AA group, where it was known that you went upstairs to the little surrender room and you took all the steps but the ninth step, and then they would let you go to the meeting. This was kind of a drive-by shooting approach. Everything was done very quickly. You were sort of surrounded by some of the members who were looking you over, sniffing you, and carrying on. You had to qualify, of course, and such as that. They tried to replicate this experience in this book called Back to Basics. It has, I think, honorable intentions. The intention is to get people into the steps as quickly as possible, get them through a set of steps in some form or fashion with the great hope that they would come back and actually take the steps out of the big book. That's the intent, and I think it was honorable. The way they did it, though, was they coattailed Alcoholics Anonymous to do it. And when I say coattail, what does that cat mean by that? What I'm saying is, it looks like AA, had the old circus cover on the deal, the red, yellow, and black cover. It looks really AA, and they mention AA throughout. Even though they have a little disclaimer on the front that says it's not Alcoholics Anonymous Conference approved literature. And then there was a movement that kind of grew up around Back to Basics, the literature. And that movement doesn't necessarily spend a lot of time talking to its members about honoring traditions like public anonymity breaks and things like that. So what's happened out of Back to Basics is maybe some recoveries are occurring. I can't say. I don't know. Not been through it. I take the steps the same way I always have. Out of the big book, line by line. When it says do something, we do it. That's how I take the steps. That's how I transmit the message of the steps. I do the same thing with the traditions, the same thing with the concepts. We don't read the essays. They can read. Talk about being salted. Have somebody read to you from up here. God. No. I expect that they can read for themselves. And I tell stories around this stuff. Obviously, I have a few. And we can cover everything pretty well, I think. That's how I take people through. Sometimes in this traditions it takes 6 weeks, sometimes eight. Concepts maybe 4 or 5 weeks, a couple hours each time. I don't want anybody that I'm working with to be afraid of any part of this thing because nobody ever told them. My obligation as a sponsor is to inform the people I work with about what it is they're really getting into. And if they stay around till the end of that deal, good for you.
Okay. Powder keg potential. In the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, they illustrate a couple of time frames for how long it takes to engage in and then complete the steps. There's certain power words, next, at once, launched. They make reference to some of the later chapters as to the first couple of weeks, you know, or, you know, Bill, some people reference Bill, you know, within the first 2 weeks he was working the steps, Bob, you know, in such and such time. From a historical perspective, is there any kind of established guideline as to how long the process of working the 12 steps should take?
Should take? No.
Okay.
Not that I'm aware of. I think all of us have an idea what it is. Depends on your approach. I was taken through line by line. That takes a while. Line 3 of the evening and we're hung. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, try to prove themselves exception to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. And the guy looks at you, just a minute. And it's not a minute. I don't know how long it's going to take. With somebody that's been sober, actually been through the steps out of the book, I don't do that. I give them a reading assignment, I want highlighters, I want writing, I want notes, I want, bring it. Let's talk about what you disagree with, maybe. I'm not interested in what you agree with. What do you disagree with? Are you doomed? You know? That's how I do it. Yeah.
And
I'll get to you.
I think there's a pamphlet called Problems Other Than Alcohol.
Yes.
And Bill specifically says at the very beginning, the teaching and practice of the 12 steps is what this is about. And at some point, this idea of service, I've heard people look at it two ways. Service is the strenuous work, one alcoholic with another, one addict with another, or anything that makes carrying the message possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then should there be an idea, I guess is my question, that if you're going to be a voice in this service structure that affects all of us, that you've worked the 12 steps?
That is helpful.
But do you think there'll never be anything that says you know, maybe even a recommendation, because then you end up with people voting that don't have a message.
Hey, we've got to watch who we elect. What is it with the bunch of step? You just call them big book thumpers and enthusiasts, let's call them. What happens when they don't make themselves available to this part of the work?
Yeah.
What happens when they become one-dimensional players? They're standing on a one-legged stool, not three. What is it about this work that's so unattractive? I disagree with Bill, by the way. Sorry. Chapter 7 cautions us to never put this work on a service plane. Because when we do, we create wrong dependence. And I think personally that's what's broke with sponsorship. Wrong dependence on people, less dependence on God. If I just get the right sponsor, man, you know, I'm going to make it. That's not true. You can't even know who the right sponsor is going to be for you. You start by falling off a cliff. And you ask somebody to help you. We don't even require that anymore. We just give them phone lists, throw big books at them. We're just a service provider. And I've never met an alcoholic yet that wasn't a usurper of services. We'll suck the life right out of them until some more services show up. Sponsorship can foster wrong dependence. It can, and it does often. But it's because the sponsor has lost sight and the sponsee doesn't know.
Yeah.
And as informed members of Alcoholics Anonymous, you now know. It's on you to avoid wrong dependence. Don't you set yourself up to be God and the solver of all problems. The best answer is the hardest one. I don't know, man. I think I'd pray for death if I were you. I had a sponsor actually tell me that. I took him down the Daisy Trail, over the river, through the woods, on this great tail. And he just looked at me, kind of peaked, and said, I believe I'd just pray for death if I were you, Gary. And that's not even an answer. He was not hearing me. Bob was hard of hearing. So I needed to be more emphatic. He was absolutely right. Absolutely right. We don't fix that here. Ma'am, you had a question.
That was very well explained. Thank you so much. So with our home group, you know, we're CA, but we welcomed AA members and, you know, people with addiction. That is something that we choose to do in our group, right? So each group can make that decision. It's not something like, okay, if you're an AA, you have to be an alcoholic, or you can, you know, other, because you had touched on this a little bit earlier, Is that a decision that's made within each group on who they let come to the meetings?
The group conscience, the traditions for Cocaine Anonymous are the same as for AA. The group conscience trumps everything except for the conditions of traditions 3 through 12. If any of those conditions are out of line, the group conscience is not informed and did not make the right decision. So nobody can tell anybody what to do. But if you've got a group conscience that supports something that is contrary to the rest of the traditions in any way, that group conscience is not informed, and as a result, it is suspect. Does that make sense? The idea is to arrive at what we call an informed group conscience by employing all of the traditions en masse. These are not separate ideas. They are dovetailed ideas that just kind of parade along. You can't tell where one tradition stops and one starts. They're all interrelated. Very much like the steps. When is the last time you were at a step 5 meeting without hooking 4 into it somehow? Even though there's a chapter break there in the big book.
Yep.
Interesting why they would put that there. See? So, they're all interrelated. I'm not familiar with Cocaine Anonymous's... I don't want to call it like a mission statement or a statement of purpose, but that's basically what it is. I think Cocaine Anonymous says cocaine and any mind-altering substances. Am I correct in that? And this probably came from some conference recommendation that they had. Okay, if that's what their conscience is, okay. Assumedly, it's been tested. Can a CA member be an AA member? No. Unless they're alcoholic. At which point in AA, we're not going to talk about the other, we're going to talk about alcohol. That's AA's singleness of purpose. We just deal with booze. We don't care what medicine says. We don't care what religion says. We don't care what psychiatry says. We don't care because we are uniquely qualified to help alcoholics. If they have other afflictions, probably there's a 12-step fellowship that would cover that. As a member who is an alcoholic and an addict, it is incumbent upon you in your AA life to wear your alcoholic hat and to wear your addict hat when you're in CA or NA or whatever it would happen to be. And I have no problem with that. Great. But you come to my house, we're going to work the steps, we're going to talk about booze. That's what we're going to talk about. And I'll hear you on your... What do they call them? Drug logs? Is that what they call them?
War stories.
Huh?
War stories.
War stories? Yeah, personal adventures. But, you know. We can deal with that. There was a question in the back. Yes?
On the way over, we talked about, you know, how this is a harder way to live. It's easier to pick up some booze. And the world, once you accept this way of life, how the world is, you know, how you got to fight against the world. You defined service just a few minutes ago.
Unity,
what does that look like to you? That's the one that looks like everybody, you know, so many different messages.
Unity?
Unity is seen foreign, like politics. You know, so many different, you know, this is over here. We can never, under the Constitution, publish a unified body, discuss issues, and get some things done. It's just like everything is spread out. How do you envision unity?
I don't think unity means that we agree.
Right. But it's a dialogue.
But I'm willing to accept the idea of an informed group conscience, a constructive, healthy discussion about the topic at hand, and I will accept the group conscience on a two-thirds or better vote. I will not accept a simple majority for anything in Alcoholics Anonymous, for anything. I don't even care if it's, are we going to go meet over at this church, because these guys are rotten. I don't care. Anything on a majority, I'm suspect, and you ought to be too. If something is so good, it ought to pass unanimously. Then you have achieved unity. On a spiritual level, it starts in the fifth step. God, myself, and another human being. The perfect triangle is formed, and we are protected in that moment. Because we have come together in truth. Two liars trying to sort it out. And God protects us. Great visual. It's a great visual. God, myself, and another human being. God, myself, and another human being. And every aspect of my life. When it's just God and me, I'm sweeping it under the rug. When it's just God and me, I've got a secret. How about you? I've got a secret. How about you? That's my quote description. We do not define hardly anything in AA. We describe it.
Yeah.
Our description, it doesn't say our definition of the alcoholic. It says our description of the alcoholic. The chapter to the agnostic. We don't define anything. When we come back, we're going to take a little break here. I know it's been, looks like it's been about an hour. Am I right?
Yes, sir.
We'll take a little over. I've got, when we come back, we're going to be at 2:30. This is scheduled to 4:30. I would really like to continue this on a more give and take basis where you guys ask questions. It's getting long. I think it's a little warm in here. It might just be me. But I would like to continue a broad-based discussion of these matters. There's some things I can close it up by saying, but we're basically going to have two more sessions if that's agreeable. And we'll try to get this thing done on time, okay? So why don't we take 10 minutes right now? Is that okay, everybody? Seeing no objection, I move that we adopt it.